Rapids featuring PK Mayo, Monday, August 10th as part of the Martini Monday Music Series from 5 to 8 p.m. Reservations available at 218-326-2600.
And we receive support from the Lake Country Journal, a lifestyle magazine since 1997, a local publication sharing stories from the heart of Minnesota about the places to go, things to do, and people to know in Lake Country. LakeCountryJournal.com.
And this is 91.7 KAXC Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXC Bagley Bemidji. We operate translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Since 1976, Northern Community Radio has been telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Listen at KAXC.org or on your smart speaker. Keep KAXC people powered into the future with your support now. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you. And looking at weather today, it's going to be sunny skies with temps in 75 to 80 range. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with lows in the upper 50s, lower 60s.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Stockpiles of U.S. missiles are running low as the war with Iran enters its sixth month. NPR's Kat Lonsdorf reports the Army has used up most of its long-range attack missiles.
It's all classified. The Pentagon doesn't give out the numbers of missiles that have been used. We do know that there have been more than 15,000 Iranian targets hit during this war. Many of those have been in the massive U.S. airstrikes that the U.S. was carrying out earlier. Now, we should note that many senior military officials and analysts believe that the U.S. does have sufficient supply of offensive weapons for now, despite those shortages I just mentioned. You know, one of the concerns with running low on these precision missiles is that it takes years to replenish them.
That's NPR's Kat Lonsdorf reporting. President Trump on Tuesday set a deal over the Strait of Hormuz could come as soon as today. The world's largest oil company says it's seen a 33% increase in profits since April. Saudi Arabia's Aramco announced the earnings in a statement on Tuesday. NPR's Hadil Al-Shalchi reports this comes despite escalations in the Middle East.
Saudi Arabia's oil company Aramco said it earned a profit of $33.4 billion in adjusted net income in April through June. That's up from $25.2 billion in the same quarter last year. It's one of Aramco's largest quarterly profits in almost 4 years. Many oil companies have benefited from the war with Iran as it has driven energy prices up. Aramco had to find alternative ways to route its oil shipments as the war affected the Strait of Hormuz. It used pipelines on the Red Sea and exported millions of barrels of oil a day. But now the Red Sea route is at risk as Yemen's Iran-backed Houthis declared a blockade on Saudi ships. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Istanbul.
There's still no winner in Michigan's heavily contested Democratic Senate primary. Congresswoman Haley Stevens, a moderate, is trailing her progressive opponent as ballots continue to be counted. Colin Jackson of the Michigan Public Radio Network reports.
Stevens' race against former public health official Abdul El-Sayed was one of the most contested primaries in the country. Nationally, some viewed it as a test of how a moderate campaign would fare against progressive politics in a purple state. Democrats see winning Michigan as key to taking back the U.S. Senate. Stevens had the establishment's support and says Democrats need to be ready for the general election.
Republicans are going to do everything they can to throw all the dirt, all the mud, the kitchen sink at us.
Outside spending was a major factor in this race. Stevens received upwards of $60 million in ad support from groups including the pro-Israel lobby, AIPAC. I'm Colin Jackson in Detroit.
This is NPR News. Embattled Ohio Republican Congressman Max Miller is under investigation by the House Ethics Committee after asking the panel to review allegations made by his former wife. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports Miller has released a video statement and supporting documents denying the claims.
In a statement on X, Miller says he is seeking the ethics probe to clear his name in connection with accusations of abuse. Those allegations were made by Miller's ex-wife, Emily Moreno, the daughter of Ohio GOP Senator Bernie Moreno. On Sunday, Miller posted an extended video statement and trove of documents to defend against the claims. However, the documents included sensitive images of the couple's minor child that his legal team has said were inadvertently shared. Following that effort, Senator Moreno said Miller, who was in a tough re-election fight, was not fit to serve. The matter has divided Republicans in Congress, but time is running out for Miller and for the party to decide whether he stays in the race. Claudia DeSalles, NPR News.
North Carolina Republican Congressman Chuck Edwards is ending his bid for another term in Congress. Edwards announced on social media that after what he called much prayer and reflection, he's withdrawing from the race but will serve out the rest of his current term. The announcement comes days after the House Ethics Committee recommended censuring Edwards over findings that he engaged in inappropriate conduct toward two young female staffers. Edwards has denied wrongdoing. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. RWJF is a national philanthropy working toward a future where health is no longer a privilege, but a right. Learn more at rwjf.org.
Look up, but I can't stop looking down.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Please make way on the Wednesday morning show for the king and queen of green cheese.
And here they are in person.
In royal garb.
In royal garb. The garage sale ninjas. Thank you for coming and just blessing us with your presence this morning.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome.
We're sorry that the room is not quite up to the royal specifications. We don't have the carpet out.
We did try. I mean, we gilded the speakers and everything. And
we are going to have to clean up all this confetti we put out, though.
Yeah. I mean, it is work like a dog day, and we did.
And we will be working like a dog afterwards.
Exactly.
Here.
Exactly. Well, thank you for joining us on the Wednesday morning show. It's so great to have you here. We almost never have royalty.
Almost.
So for those of you who maybe aren't in the know, we are great Green Cheese program is our radio call-in trivia show that happens every Saturday night. And once a year, we have a picnic and everybody gets together. Well, not everybody. We wish everybody.
Yeah, we wish everybody.
But we get together in person in Grand Rapids at the KEXE studio. And a king and queen of cheese is crowned. And there's much applauding. And and there's the actual crowning. I mean, how would you describe your royal garb?
I would say duct tape to the max.
Duct tape to the max. It's a little rustly. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yep.
And you have the crowns as well with lots of jewels on them.
Lots of jewels.
Yes.
I'm sure they're worth thousands.
Yes, it was very brave of you to wear that in here today.
I'm really glad we brought the security detail this morning.
It was quite a crowd we had to swim through.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that happens everywhere you go now.
Oh, absolutely.
This past year.
Yes. It's hard to be anywhere incognito.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, if I were the queen of anything, I would be wearing that to Aldi for real. So, were you surprised when you were crowned the king and queen of green cheese last year at the picnic?
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, we had a little bit of an inkling when Nancy came and talked to us beforehand.
Right. Yeah.
And but we thought, nah, she's not going to pick us.
Nancy, the former queen, Nancy, beautiful downtown.
What was the inkling? Was like, how big are your heads? We've got crowns here.
She didn't bring a tape measure. No. Maybe we should do that.
Right.
You measure people's heads.
She was sizing you up, you might say.
Yes, yeah. Because heavy the head that wears the crown.
Oh, yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. What do you guys like? You've been cheesers for years.
Do you remember about how you first heard about green cheese?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead. We were somewhere driving from somewhere to Bemidji and looking for something to listen to on the radio. And we happened to come across green cheese, and we heard them asking these questions and people calling in with answers. And we're like, what is this? It sounds like so much fun. And I think that led to us becoming lifetime cheesers.
Yep. What is it about green cheese that you love so much?
Oh, it's just so fun. Trying to figure out the answers to the questions and trying to get in.
Yes.
It has become so popular that, and the weird thing of when you're trying to get in, you might be calling 150 times, and in the meantime, somebody else gets in 5 or 6 times. So it's the luck of the draw. You really, you know, and then one night you might try 3 times and get in right away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you just never know.
Unless you have a tin can phone with a string.
Then you're guaranteed.
Absolutely.
I mean, the lower the technology, the better, I think, in some cases.
Which is strange. The host never bring up the tin can.
Oh, it does get brought up every now and then.
Okay.
Yes, because that's what Simon has. And Simon does tend to get in fairly often. And so, yes, that's how, you know, we found green cheese as well with a crabby baby in the back seat and driving around. And there's just something that draws you in. And I think, you know, it is so much fun, but I think it's also the personalities.
Yes.
Right.
And then there's this community that kind of forms over the airwaves, and it's so much fun to listen to.
And you get to know people's voices.
Yeah.
You know instantly, oh, okay, I know who that is. That's Nancy. That's, you know, whoever's calling.
Or I bet this person will call in about the baseball questions.
Yes.
Or this person will call in about the science questions.
Yes.
So it's really fun. So the picnic is coming up this Saturday.
Yes.
And
yes.
You will be there, of course, to abdicate and to crown a new king and queen.
Yes.
Can you describe the picnic for us?
It is such a fun evening. You know, we can go into the silly thing of that, oh, the huge crowds, and but it really is just a time of getting together and meeting people that you've heard, putting faces with the voices, and just having a grand old time. Would you like me to read the...
We would love the royal poetry. Yes, please.
This is our decree about the
picnic. Okay, here we go, here we go. Yes. Wait, here's... should I get the fanfare going? The royal decree.
The king and the queen hereby sayeth, in Grand Rapids on August the 8th, the picnic will be a time of great glee. If you're a fan of green cheese, then come join us, please. There'll be potluck and jokes, along with meeting new folks. So bring questions to ask, since it's our turn at this task. And at the end of the eve, with reluctance, we'll leave. As we all exit the tent, you'll be so glad you went.
Love it.
It's a wonderful decree. Oh my gosh. I think that's a wonderful decree. And do you have any others that you would like to, you know, you only have a little bit of time left for being in this great, you know, amount of power. So
I think what I will stress is safety first. With the, you know, when you attend, there's going to be a shuttle service from Bemidji to Grand Rapids. Grand Forks Air Force Base has loaned us a couple of C-130s. So, you know, there's no comfortable seating in one of those aircraft. So you have to kind of, you know, pick your spot and just board in an orderly fashion and disembark in an orderly fashion. There'll be a shuttle, various limousine services from the Grand Forks or from the Grand Rapids airport to the site. So just do everything in an orderly fashion. Yep. No pushing, no shoving.
Yeah.
And
the security checks, of course. You have to go through the multiple security checks.
Exactly.
They will be testing your casseroles. And
yeah, are you bringing a casserole?
Well, we'll be bringing something for the potluck. But yeah, you'll have to come and see.
Oh.
I'll be in Colorado.
Yeah.
I have to go to a wedding. Not a royal wedding, unfortunately.
Oh. Oh, you will be missed, Andrew.
Yeah, I've never been to the green cheese picnic. I would like to go eventually. So that's my plan eventually.
Yeah, on your bucket list.
Fun. Yeah, I don't know what I'm bringing yet either, but I'm excited to be there.
It's, you asked, you know, what is the picnic all about? But yeah, it's like a family picnic.
Yeah.
You know, like when you were a kid and your whole family gets together. It truly is a green cheese family.
Yes, family reunion.
Yep. So a question I've always had about the picnic, of course, people will recognize you because you'll be wearing the royal garb, but how do people find out who is who? Like just going up to each other and like, who are you?
we have name tags.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Well, also sometimes you'll hear someone just across the entire yard and you know exactly who it is. So, and I'm not shy about going up to people and saying, I know who you are. And then, you know, hopefully trying to connect them with other people. So everybody feels, you know, included. And I think that's really important. So, but yeah, some people want to be more anonymous and that's fine too.
Mm-hmm. And I have listened to it before, and the live show is very, very fun.
It is so much fun, and you never know what's going to happen.
And the beauty of being at the picnic is if you want to answer
a question, you don't have to try and dial in.
Yeah.
You right. just get in line.
Yep.
And you know, okay, there's two people ahead of me. I get to answer the next
Absolutely.
Question.
Absolutely.
Excellent. All right. Well, do you have any final thoughts as the king and queen of green cheese before we send you back out to the royal carriage outside?
Mm-hmm. The horses look very, very relaxed today.
Well, we gave them those special oats.
Oh, yeah.
Royal oats.
The ones that make them fly.
I have
special thoughts.
Special thoughts.
Well, just everybody show up and yeah. bring a dish to share. And
you'll be glad you came.
Exactly.
You know, it's not intimidating.
Mm-hmm. No.
And you know, everybody gets up, tells jokes. We have the trivia. And make sure you bring your answers with your trivia.
Yep.
And jokes, apparently.
Yes. Right. The jokes, that's one of the best parts, I think.
Yes.
You can practice your stand-up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, King and Queen of Green Cheese. We are humbled by your presence. And now we will send you off into the carriage. Oh, they are walking away now. It is so wonderful. Thank you so much. Oh, there was people bowing.
Oh my gosh. I've never seen such a display.
All right. Now we're going to play a song for you. This is Tiff Merritt from their new album, Sugar. This song is called this one's called Look What Love Just Did.
Tending to everyone else's.
And that is Tift Merritt from their new album, Sugar. That song is called Look What Love Just Did, here on the Wednesday Morning Show. And we got a couple more texts on the text line. We're looking for Dog's Heart at Work. And we got a video, actually.
Oh.
Here's Taco, my work dog. He is doing quality control for us here at the flooring store. I think he approves of this carpet. This is from Laura. And we are seeing a wonderful floor inspection, rubbing of the back on the floor.
Oh, my gosh.
Lots of hard work. Glad to see Taco hard at work.
And we're also hearing from Susan from Cotton. Willow and Chico doing guard duty. That's their work. And they are, you can tell how intent they are at guarding the house. It's a very classic cartoon style.
Yep. Big Laurel dog. And Hardy type situation.
Big dog, little dog. Oh, so cute. Oh,
and they are doing both an excellent job of guarding. Thank you, Susan from Cotton, for sharing that with us. If you have pictures of your dogs working hard today on Work Like a Dog Day, text us at 218-326-1234. You're tuned into the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle, here with Heather Johnson.
Good morning. And we're working like dogs.
Absolutely. Support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gig and GigaZone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
And we receive support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
And we were just visited by the King and Queen of Green Cheese, and what a time it was.
Oh my gosh.
We are going to have to work a lot to get all these streamers off of the ceiling here.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think I actually like the gilded speakers. I think they really kind of bring the room together.
Yeah, we could use more gold here.
Yeah, and we could maybe prepare for our next royal visit, you know, keep it going.
You know, you always have to be alert because you never know when royalty will visit.
I mean, you kind of do because of all the heraldry that precedes them, but, you know.
But it could happen at a moment's notice, saying, hey, they're coming tomorrow.
Yeah.
Be prepared.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we had to have the stables and everything put up last night for the carriage horses. Yes. And it was a lot, but it was worth it.
Now, so if you want to see the King and Queen of Green Cheese, you'll need to come to the Green Cheese Picnic this Saturday in KXE's backyard in Grand Rapids. Bring a dish to share, your favorite beverage, and your own chair. The fun starts at 5 p.m. with live green cheese trivia from 7 to 9. We'll have a group of hosts there ready to take your questions and answers. You can bring your own trivia questions as well. And at the end of the evening, we'll crown a new King and Queen of Green Cheese.
It'd be so much fun.
Support for this program comes from Sanford Health, with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the Upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
And support for KAXE comes from the Namath Arts Center, located in the historic Hubbard County Courthouse in Park Rapids, featuring works by Julia Coffey, Pete Dreesen, and more, on display now through September 26th. More information is available at namathartcenter.org.
And do you want to be a DJ? KXE is holding training for new volunteer DJs. You can join us on Monday, August 24th at the KAXE studio in Grand Rapids from 6 to 7:30. Email volunteer at kaxe.org with any questions or to confirm attendance. And happy to say, it's just one day of training. Back in my day, you had to go to 2 days of training.
Yes.
Get it all done in one night? What could be better?
Well, we are so lucky, too, to have such a wealth of talent, right, in our volunteer pool. So come and join us and try your hand at DJing, because it may seem intimidating, but really, once you learn a few basics, you are going to be amazing.
And what's cooler than getting to pick the music that people have to listen to?
I know. Well, and there's just so much to choose from, you know, because we don't have big restrictions. We don't have algorithms. We're not mandating.
Yeah, this is hand-picked radio.
It is truly hand-picked, and you get to show your personality and your taste and what you think the listeners will like.
Yeah, so that'll be going on Monday, August 24th. Now it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Stella Mayerhoff with the Up North Report. Senator Amy Klobuchar is part of a bipartisan group aiming to delay a ban on THC products derived from hemp plants set to take effect in November. The Minnesota Reformer reports the Hemp Planting Predictability Act made it into a Senate budget deal that would prevent a government shutdown until at least December. Last year, the federal government closed a loophole created by the 2018 Farm Bill. The loophole helped grow the low-dose THC industry. The new law limits THC derived from hemp plants to 0.4 milligrams per container. Even the lowest dosage drinks and edibles have at least 2 milligrams. The hemp ban would effectively shut down the low-dose THC industry in Minnesota, hurting brewers, farmers, and small businesses. Klobuchar's provision would delay the ban for 1 month. The deal must still pass both chambers and be signed by President Donald Trump. A new monument at White Oak Casino in Deer River honors the 50th anniversary of a landmark U.S. Supreme Court case and its plaintiff. Aaron Bowman has the story.
A stone eagle sits on a black stone pillar with a picture of Helen Jean Charwood Bryan outside of the small tan and green casino. Bryan and her husband Russell were the lead plaintiffs of Bryan v. Itasca, a Supreme Court case decided in June 1976. It helped pave the way for tribal gaming. Phil Johnson is the general manager at White Oak Casino. He says he hopes the monument will inform more people about the case.
If you go talk to them, like our own native kids, I bet you 80% of them don't even know, you know, about this stuff.
The case started when the Bryans were taxed about $150 by Itasca County on their mobile home on the Leech Lake Reservation. The Bryans went to what is now known as the Anishinaabe Legal Services and worked with them to file a lawsuit. The organization argued the state did not have the authority to tax the Bryans, as they were on tribal land. The case went all the way to the Supreme Court. In a unanimous decision, the court sided with the Bryans. It went further and said states can't enforce civil laws on tribal land. The case was used in future Supreme Court cases to argue that gambling laws couldn't be enforced on tribal lands if they were civil laws. Cody Nelson is the executive director at Anishinaabe Legal Services.
The legal scholars I've read, it's, you know, one of the biggest for economic impacts to cases, pro-tribal cases in the U.S. Supreme Court and U.S. history.
According to the National Indian Gaming Commission, tribal gaming generated $46.2 billion in revenue in 2025. The monument says Helen Bryan, quote, will forever be remembered as a true hero within our community and for the lasting impact her efforts had on tribal sovereignty and Indian gaming. Aaron Bowman, KAXE News.
The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources announced the winners of its annual fish stamp contest, and one is a northern Minnesotan. The 2027 walleye stamp will feature an oil painting from Virginia artist John Barnard.
I just couldn't believe it. No, I've just been doing it for years and years, and I do it because I like doing it, mostly.
Barnard says he paints as a hobby and has been submitting his work to the DNR stamp contest since 2000. Shannon Fisher, Minnesota DNR Fisheries Populations Monitoring and Regulations Manager, says some walleye populations have struggled with changing lake conditions, and that stamps can help.
We do sell about 34,000 stamps a year. So it brings in about $165,000 to $175,000 a year.
The trout and salmon stamps are a requirement for some anglers looking to fish for trout. The purchase of walleye stamps is voluntary. Even so, these stamps remain popular.
It costs $5, and the profits are specifically used for purchasing walleye fingerlings from private producers to supplement the stocking programs that we have across the state.
You can view the winning artwork at our website, kaxe.org. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories at kaxe.org, where you can also find more content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Report for America Core member Stella Mayerhoff, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
sitting on the corner, suitcase in my hand, Jackson's closer, Jane is in her vest, and me, I'm in a rock and roll band. Huh. Riding a studs back at gym, you know, those were different times. All the poets, they studied rules of verse, and those ladies, they rolled their eyes. CJ, oh, CJ, oh, CJ. I tell you something, Jack, he is a banker. And both of them save their monies. And when they come home from work, ooh, sitting down by the fire, the radio does play the classical music, their jam, the march of the wooden soldiers. All your protest kids, you can hear Jack say, get rid of here. And other people say have to work, just watch me now. And there's even some evil mothers, well, they're gonna tell you that everything is just dirt. You know that women never really faint, and that villains always blink their eyes. Ooh. And that, you know, children are the only ones who blush, and that life is just to die.
Morning edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. The surrealist artist Salvador Dali was from Spain, but a new exhibit at the Dali Museum in Tampa Bay argues it was America that made him a celebrity. Kathy Carter from member station WUSF takes us there.
Salvador Dali first came to the United States in 1934. When his ship docked in New York Harbor, the press was waiting. As cameras clicked, the artist dramatically untied a painting strapped to his chest, revealing a nude portrait of his wife, Gala. Resting on her shoulders was a pair of lamb chops.
So he really came to the United States with a real understanding of mass media and exploited it from day one.
Jennifer Cohen is a head curator at the Dali Museum, and she says the nation's 250th birthday is a good time to lean into Dali's ties to America. The artist returned to the U.S. frequently, and for 8 years he lived here full-time after escaping Europe during World War II. Hank Hine, the museum's longtime director, says America offered Dali a fresh canvas for his wild imagination.
He loved the possibilities, the energy, the resources. All these things were so antithetical to the life in Europe. So he was thrilled by America.
Dalí turned up in museum shows, on Broadway as a costume designer, and in storefronts along New York's Fifth Avenue. A Dalí-designed window display for the department store Bonwit Teller in 1939 included a mannequin with a head made of roses and an early prototype of his now-famous lobster telephone. By the 1950s, Dalí was seemingly everywhere in American pop culture. In the exhibit, videos show his TV appearances, from late-night talk shows to the guessing game, What's My Line?
Have you a mustache that is rather well known? In fact, could you be almost caricatured just by that?
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you, Arlene. Are you Salvador Dali?
Salvador Dali is right.
And he was a much-used pitch man selling products from Alka-Seltzer to an airline.
Whitey Ford and his new friend Salvador Dali always fly Braniff. They like our food, they like our style, and they like to be on time.
When you got it, flaunt it.
Tell him, Dali, baby.
The artist also conquered Hollywood and worked with Alfred Hitchcock and Walt Disney. While living for a time in California, Dalí and Gala often threw extravagant surrealist dinner parties, as reported in this 1941 newsreel.
A puzzled guest, Bob Hope, sees the fish course served in satin slippers. Presumably, the fish is soul.
For roughly four decades, Dalí lived at the St. Regis Hotel in New York City during annual months-long stays. He continued to paint here until failing health marked his return to Spain in the 1980s. Today, Dalí remains one of the art world's most famous figures. Museum director Hein says that's thanks to a pair of influences. One, his wife Gala, and the other, the United States.
And without those two, he would have been a moderately respected landscape painter in the coast of Spain, seen by very few people.
Now the largest collection of Dalí's paintings outside of Europe is in St. Petersburg, and as guests exit the show, they can see one of Dalí's sentiments painted in big, bold letters. It reads, "Only America had enough fresh intelligence and available energy to fulfill my hypertrophic self." For NPR News, I'm Kathy Carter in St. Petersburg, Florida.
This is NPR News.
You are listening to Morning Edition here on member-supported radio KAXE KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with my co-star, Heather Johnson.
We received support from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
Support for KXE comes from Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in northern Minnesota by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. More at woodworksmn.com. And it is National Work Like a Dog Day, and we want to see your pictures of your dogs working hard today. Maybe they're guarding the house.
They could be guarding. What else could they? They could be singing.
They could be singing. Do you have any singing dogs?
Yep. They could be cleaning your floor. I mean, that is definitely a dog specialty, I would say. So 218-326-1234. We would love for you to text us pictures, because who doesn't want to see cute pictures of dogs? Come on.
Absolutely. So you have famously two cats.
Famously. Two terrible cats.
What's their jobs?
Hugs's job is to cause chaos and to be really, really, really soft but unpettable. Mm-hmm. No, he's not unpettable.
Maybe he's a chaos agent.
I think he might be at least two penguins in a cat suit. It's possible. Stu's job is to be on alert, probably because he lives with Hugs.
Yeah.
And also to just always know what's going on and where, if there are bugs in the house.
He needs what to know does he that. Do?
He tries to throw himself off the half wall and break his legs in pursuit of the bugs.
Well, someone's got to do it.
I mean, he's very dedicated, especially for a cat. Cats are, you know, not known to be workers, but they do have jobs.
Well, we respect all cat workers.
We do.
Even if it is National Work Like a Dog Day.
They'll have their, you know, every dog has their day. Every cat probably does too, right?
Yeah, I assume they get weekends then.
Yeah, probably weekends. Every day's a weekend when you're a house cat.
Now it's time for Area Voices, our look at the local arts, history, and culture in our area here on KAXE. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. The Paul Bunyan Playhouse 2026 season is wrapping up with the final performances of Avenue Q this weekend. Today, I'm joined by two people who work behind the scenes at the Paul Bunyan Playhouse to keep these shows going. We discuss the history of the Paul Bunyan Playhouse and what people can expect for Avenue Q.
Hi, I'm Roy C. Booth, and I am the executive director for Paul Bunyan Playhouse.
Cynthia Booth. I am the president of the Paul Bunyan Playhouse Board.
All right. So we've got a show going on this week at the Paul Bunyan Playhouse, Avenue Q. What can you tell us about the show?
Well, Avenue Q is a very unique show, very popular, won awards. It's been all over. It is a musical with puppets. It is a musical for adults. It is not a kid's Muppet sort of thing. It deals with adults trying to find their way, trying to navigate through jobs and relationships and purpose in life.
There was some surprise of Avenue Q coming to Paul Bunyan Playhouse. What was kind of the thinking of bringing it here?
Well, it's a very untraditional show. It's very creative, but it has elements in it that, like I said, not all family friendly. It is for a more mature audience, but it also has some more non-traditional things. You've got the puppets. You've got puppets interacting with people. It's like Sesame Street. They sing songs with people, do little movements and dancing, interacting with people. And the setting is a more urban setting. So that's the other reason people have said, really, wow, you're bringing this to Bemidji. Yes, it's something that we are trying, and the audience, for the most part, has really loved it.
Yeah, so far, the first weekend seems to be a very success with audiences so far.
Well, we had some standing ovations, and we've had some very interesting conversations during intermission and after the show, all very positive. And, you know, a lot of people like it because, you know, most of the young crowd, they've heard the music before, they know the songs, they've got the CD of, you know, soundtrack of the show. To see all these people singing along with it at certain points is pretty cool.
What I like about this season of the Paul Bunyan Playhouse is there was kind of that mix of kind of a variety of styles of shows. And so what is the selection process for shows at the Paul Bunyan Playhouse?
Well, it varies. That is something that is traditionally decided by the executive director. Generally, in the past, there has been an attempt to cast a very wide net to appeal to a broad group of people. And I think that this show is a little bit narrower in that because it is different. It is more unique. Church Basement Ladies, definitely broad net. It's something that is to be expected for a theater like ours to do.
And so how would you describe the atmosphere of a Paul Bunyan Playhouse show, even not just Avenue Q, but throughout this season?
Well, this season, things have been pretty positive. Like I said, a lot of people were glad to see we're back again because we took last year off due to some financial problems we had, everything else like that. So a lot of people are very glad to see us back, just at any capacity. And I think we've kind of improved upon their expectations this season.
Yeah. Have you seen like a surge of support this year, having taken last year off and then coming back this year?
Yes, we have. Some of us ties in with the storm we had last year and everything else. People are just glad to see that we're back. You know, this is our 74th season. So there is a real impact of us culturally and socially in town. You've got something that's been around since 1951. You know, you like to see that continue on and flourish.
Yeah, what is it about the Paul Bunyan Playhouse that, what does it add to a community like Bemidji?
Well, from a financial standpoint, it adds quite a bit. There's a study done by the Minnesota Arts Board a while back that showed we basically break in about maybe $250,000 worth of revenue.
Oh, wow.
Outside of the shows. People drive in, they get gas, they get a meal, they might buy some, new clothes for the show, a whole bunch of other things. I own Roy's Comics and Games downtown, and I have a gentleman from Winnipeg who comes down to see the shows, and his caveat for his wife to join him is she has to see a show so he can go to the comic book store.
You mentioned that there's like a board for the Paul Bunyan Playhouse. How do people in the Bemidji area get involved in the Paul Bunyan Playhouse system?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. It's pretty direct. You can contact any of us directly. You can go to our website, cheaptheater.com. Basically, it gives you all the information there for donating, as well as for, getting in touch with somebody. We've got lots of ways people can help. And I know that Roy, coming up in the future, will be really expanding upon our use of volunteers and working within the community to utilize a lot of people and a lot of resources that are in the community can tap those so that we can benefit and the community can benefit from us being here and doing these shows. It started out originally as a mentorship kind of program, an internship program in coordination with BSU. That was the original purpose, to have the summer shows going on.
What could someone expect, like, if they're like, hey, I want to help the Paul Bunyan Playhouse, what would be like an example of something that they could do to help?
Well, it depends on the time of year. During the summer season, when we're doing our shows, we have room for, of course, the obvious ushers. We are going to have volunteers doing box office, taking tickets, just interacting with the patrons that come in, assisting them. We do sell concessions and things like that in the lobby. But I think there is also the plan is in the future to also maybe work with people in the community to train them if they're interested in learning how to do props and have them assist with doing other things around the theater.
Because back in the day, we would get a lot of our volunteer work and some of our professional staff from Bemidji State University from the theater department. Well, since we no longer have a theater department, there's been a real dearth in talent pool locally, to do certain things. So what I'd like to see is, like I said, kind of like an apprentice program. Might cast a show and have some small roles in it that may not benefit greatly for, hire a professional for. But someone local could take the role, learn the ropes, learn things from a professional director and some other professional actors, and maybe improve their game to the point where they themselves can then audition for the Paul Bunyan Playhouse and become a professional actor.
Where do the directors and the cast members come from?
Well, we have them from all over the place right now. We've got a gal from Kansas City. We've got some people from Cleveland, Ohio, New York City, the Twin Cities, Fargo, Bagley. Usually what happens is the executive director and the artistic director, they go out, they go to a bunch of cattle call auditions or whatnot, or to contact people that they know, and they plug in talent, either for the technical side of things, the stage manager, the light designer, that sort of thing, and or, all the actors, which you may be doing both at the same time.
You both have a history with the theater. Why did you two feel the need to be a part of the Paul Bunyan Playhouse system?
Well, for me, it's kind of a family thing. My grandmother, Merle Antle, would take me to shows at Rutgers when I was a kid, back in the late 60s, early 70s, and whatnot. And I also have a strong tie to the Chief Theater, because when it opened in 1935, my grandfather, Lee Antle, who was on the police force and in the fire department at the time, would play piano there. And I believe he did that up to about 1958. And Cynthia and I have some personal ties to that. One of my first professional jobs was at the Paul Bunyan Playhouse in the late 80s. Cynthia and I, one of our first dates was at the Chief Theater when we were still running movies. Matter of fact, I think the last movie we saw there was Throw Mama from the Train.
Yes.
Yeah. That was a hoot and holler. my parents had their first dates at the Chief Theater. And my uncle and my mom had their first jobs at the Chief Theater, doing concessions and cleaning up and whatnot. So I have a very strong personal tie to the theater itself. And we've both been doing theater since our teens. And we've been pretty consistent since then. Although Cynthia has done most of her work as an actor, I've done most of my work as a director, as a scenic designer.
Avenue Q, the performances are when this week?
The performances are this Wednesday, the 5th. We have a matinee at 2 o'clock. And then Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 6th, the 7th, and the 8th at 7:30 in the evening. You can go online and get your tickets. You can come right up to the door before the show. I just really want to say thank you to the people who have come out to see the show, who have donated. A lot of community people have put time and effort into working with us, into working with the theater and everything. And, you know, I think that's just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And I think those people are so special to us, and we appreciate them.
One of our main goals is not only to keep the Chief Theater and the Publine Playhouse running, and we're, you know, doing plays, movies, social events, whatnot, but our main goal is to bring back the Chief Theater as the crown jewel of the downtown again. Mm-hmm. The place to go, you know, you go to dinner, to go to a show, and just make a full night's experience.
Roy and Cynthia Booth have been my guests today. You can find more info about the Paul Bunyan Playhouse at thechieftheater.com. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. All right, that it was Area Voices here on the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingel here with Heather Johnson. And it is National Work Like a Dog Day, and we are asking for your pictures of your pets working hard today. And we got one from the text line, Emma being a golf cart overseer. And
so
it's
cute.
A dog on a back of a golf cart there, making sure that everything's running properly on the golf cart, I assume. And making sure that everyone is being safe.
Absolutely. And we also heard from Michael and Karen, dog and cat together guarding the couch. Oh, dog and cats together guarding the couch. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Now, the interesting thing is that all of them seem to have their eyes closed, mm-hmm. which may be an impairment on guarding. But you know what? Maybe they're lulling you into a sense of that there is no security, but they are very alert at a moment's notice.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, look at their ears. They're clearly, they're tuned in.
Yeah, that
in.
One cat is definitely tuned in.
Yeah, they take turns, you know.
Oh, yeah, how, they probably work in shifts.
That seems like cats, you know, very organized.
So thank you for sharing those this morning. It's been
so
wonderful seeing all these pets working hard on this National Work Hard, Work Like a Dog Day.
Absolutely. So while you're working like a dog, you can also appreciate your actual dog. We received support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering workshops in August. Crashing Waves and Oils Made Easy Workshop, August 12th through 14th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., held at 9 Central Street West in downtown Bagley. And Three Wire Wrapped Pendant Workshop, August 22nd, from 9:30 to 3, held at 9 Central Street West in downtown Bagley. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
And we receive support from the Bemidji JCs, providing leadership development through community service since 1937. For more about joining this active group of young citizens, visit BemidjiJCs.com.
Yeah, and don't forget about the Green Cheese Picnic this weekend. It's going to be so much fun.
That is going on this Saturday at the Grand Rapids Station area, and it'll begin at 5 o'clock with live green cheese trivia at 7 o'clock with our wonderful volunteer hosts.
Yes, and if you want to see more about our volunteers, you can go to Beyond the Voice on KXC.org. This week we're featuring Dave Murphy,